Accession number 29045, Mr. Keith Glover, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Glover?
I was born on the 3rd of January 1935 at 39 Burton Street in Melton Mowbray, Leicestershire.
And could you tell us a bit about your background, your family background? What sort of family you came from, what you remember?
I was number 2 of 4 sons. My father was a barber, and I say that deliberately. He was not a hairdresser, he was an old-fashioned barber. Short back and sides was what he did, and what he did extremely well. My mother, of course, was a housewife, as all women were in those days. And that's about it. Sub cheese. I grew up at 39 Burton Street.
Was it a comfortable upbringing? I mean, your dad was in steady employment, which for those days was not bad.
It was an ideal boyhood. I have no complaint at all. I've heard friends rabbit on about what miserable times they had as children. That didn't happen. We got our ears boxed, as all kids do. But I didn't grow up hating my father, and I didn't grow up hating my mother. In fact, we nearly loved each other in the fullness of time. My father became my best friend, and when he died, I lost my best friend, and I still miss him to this day. I tended, once he'd gone, to divorce myself from Mum because I couldn't go through that trauma again. And eventually she did die, and I was very, very sorry. But it didn't hurt me as much as losing my father.
So you were reasonably well off for the time and a perfectly happy child?
No, I think if it came to the crunch, we were as poor as church mice. But we survived. During the war, when food was scarce, farmers would come for their haircut and pay in kind rather than money. There'd be a rabbit or a piece of meat or something. So we were never short of food in that respect. I struggle. I can't think of any sadness in my childhood at all.
Now, what about your education? Tell us about that.
Right. It was the days of what they called the tripartite system. Grammar schools, etc. And so I went to the King's Road Primary School. No, Infant School, that was right. And then to the Ashfordby Road Primary, where we sat the 11 plus. Only I did mine at 10 and passed it. And so went to the grammar school a year earlier. That was in 1945, it was the September following the end of the Second World War. And I did 6 years there.
And how did you do at the grammar school?
I had a magnificent time. I got heavily involved in the sport. I played for the football first 11. I played for the cricket second 11. I got involved in all the operatics and the school brass band. Now, that was wonderful. Academically, although I was in the A stream, I did not perform too well at all. My heart really wasn't in education at that time. And so when I finished, I'd got only 2 O-levels, English language and maths. I'd kippered the others, only by a tad, but kippered they were.
Were there any subjects of them you particularly enjoyed or disliked?
The science side was my bag. Maths, chemistry, physics, biology. I disliked French. And what else? Nothing really. I could have done without the French, I must confess. But apart from that, I hadn't really got time to dislike anything academically. I was too busy enjoying myself on the sports field.
That was your thing, really.
Then. It certainly was.
Did you have any big hobbies or or things that you did outside, you know, Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, or...
Yes, I was a member of the 4th Melton Scout Group. Thoroughly enjoyed it. In the fullness of time became a senior scout, but then of course girls enter the scene.
Now, with the scouts, what sort of activity were quite interesting to Boy Scouts? Because they're originally military, as you may know. Well, how military was you with the sort of activities you did? Or?
Well, the whole thing sort of based round the military. We'd form up in our patrols at ease. We'd be called to attention, only they use the word alert. And then, well, you've only got to pick up Leighton Powell's book. Wide games. We loved wide games, where the troop would be split into two armies and one would soldier off into the park and hide in the trees and things. Can't do it now because there's lots and lots of people about. And then the second lot would go off and try and capture whatever it was they were supposed to capture. It was wonderful. And then we had night hikes, camping, of course, once a year, camping.
Where would you go? Would you
The one I remember mostly is at Dawlish in Devon. We had a magnificent time there. As I said earlier, we're poor as church mice, that's a bit hard. We weren't really that poor. But my folks did struggle to find spare cash to let me go on these camps. If it was a local weekend one, not a problem. But if they went a fair distance and there was a fair sum of money involved, then they had to think twice. And similarly, at school, at the grammar school, I missed out on trips because we just could not afford to let me go on them. And that meant that when I became a father, I made sure that my kids did have this facility. I didn't hold it against my folks at all. I just understood that the money wasn't there.
Now, any other, besides the Boy Scouts, any other big hobbies or things you did?
Yes, I've done most things. I rang the church bells for some years. I obviously joined what was called the Melton Town Silver Band in those days.
Matt, you mentioned, what about your music? What did you play?
In my time, I started off playing a cornet, but I've not really got the lip for that. And over the years, the instruments got bigger, tenor horn, euphonium, and I finished up playing a double B-flat bass, which I loved, and continued to play that. Still do play it, in fact.
Who taught you to play? They're all brass band things, but who taught, I think?
Yeah.
Who taught you to play?
There was a music master came to the grammar school, Eric Pinkett. He eventually became the top dog musician in the Leicestershire, set up the Leicestershire County School Orchestra and things like that. But he was not a brass bandsman. However, the school caretaker, Albert Slater, was. He played a tenor horn for the Melton Town Silver Band. And so Eric Pinkett got him to teach a number of us to play brass instruments, and it was good. We had a lot of fun. Albert Slater was a character in his own right. A lot of people didn't like him, but obviously bandsmen have kindred spirits, and I got on very well with the bloke.
And where would you perform, or would you march about? Or
No, brass bands, that sort of brass band, doesn't normally march. We'd perform at school functions, school concerts, and itsy bitsy things like that. It's a long time ago.
Now, how did the war affect your life? You mentioned one thing about it, but you were 4 when it started and 10 when it ended. Mm. How much of an impact did it have on your life, your schooling? What do you remember about the war?
One memory is that I really thought that when the war ended, there would be no more radio. My dad used to, we'd got an old set, big as a billiard table, that he would thump at regular intervals to get it to work again. And he'd be, if he wasn't in the shop cutting hair, he'd be glued to that with his left ear. listening for all the news war, the war of the news, news of the war. And I really did think that that's all the radio was there, or wireless as we called it in those days. What else? We had a lot of paratroopers in town preceding the drop at Arnhem. And I can remember a squad of soldiers being marched down Burton Street. They were called to a halt outside the shop. I was in the shop. I spent a lot of time in the shop with Dad. And the sergeant came in and said, "Barber, how many of these can you do in such and such a time?" And Dad shoved his head out the door, looked, and he said, "Eight." So the sergeant marched eight in, and Dad gave them short back and sides, and off they went. On another occasion, a soldier came in and produced this great big pistol that was obviously loaded to show Dad, who was very interested in it. I was gobsmacked. That there'd be military manoeuvres in town practicing. As lads, we used to follow the Bren gunner around just in case he'd got any blanks left, so that when he fired, we could collect all the cases. But and then again, the verges round Melton Mowbray were littered with little corrugated iron sheds, open at both end, just full of ammunition. This obviously preceded D-Day. So we were never short of ammunition. I reckon every schoolboy in Melton Mowbray had a small arsenal at home. it's a wonder we didn't kill each other, but we didn't. We'd pull the round out the cartridge case and empty whatever was inside to make fireworks. It was fun. Strictly illegal, of course, but nevertheless fun.
Anything else about V-Day, is that the next thing, V-Day celebrations or what?
Oh, when that happened, there were huge parties. We had a street party in Burton Street. I can remember I actually went to school on VE Day, because we'd not been told school was closed. And when I got there, I was the only one to get there. So I pounded on the headmaster's door. His house was next door to the school, and he opened it up in his pyjamas and said, "What do you want, Glover?" I said, "I've come to school, sir." He said, "Well, go home. It's not open." So off I went back home.
Now, what was the street party like?
Do you know, I can't really remember now. I can take you to exactly. It was up near the Collis Hall, opposite the church in Burton Street. I don't know. I honestly can't remember. The mums must have made jellies and sarnies and things like that. It was really for the kids. Although all the adults were obviously very, very happy. It was over at last.
Now, that would be the end of the war, but what about the you, when you left school? You'd leave school in when you were 14 or 16?
No, I was 16.
So that'd be 1951?
Yes. Having bogged up my O-level, that was one of the problems. I was too young to take the last of the school certs, which is what I'd been trained to do. So I had to do an extra year in the sixth form to convert to the O-level syllabus. And that's... And having only got two, I went back. Now, we get back to this hard up for money bit, and after a term Dad said, "Look, son, you've got to go to work, you've just got to get some money to help out." So Dad actually came to school with me to see the headmaster, Harry Anderson, who I loved till the day he died, and Dad's, I can remember it now, he's almost exactly. Dad said to me, don't want to leave Mr. Anderson, but he's going to have to. And Harry Anderson was as sad as me. We got on very well, the headmaster and I, basically because I was sport orientated and music orientated, and Harry put as much store on that as the academic side of his school. And so that meant in sort of December 1951, I went off to join a firm called Chappie Limited that had just moved up here from Slough. It became Pet Foods while I worked there, and eventually Pedigree Pet Foods. I worked in the laboratory.
What as?
Initially, analytical control, taking samples of the produce, either the raw materials or the finished produce, and analysing it for various bits and bobs, moisture, fat, etc., etc. And I got on very well, to such an extent that they asked me to move into the research and development lab, which I did. And that just about gets us round to when I...
Now, what were you doing in the research and development side?
It was pilot, mostly it's development, very little research. It was the development of the produce we were marketing, changing it, and then testing it to see if the dogs and the cats would go for it. We had a pilot plant, a mini production line, which I ran. And that's basically it.
And you enjoyed it?
I certainly did, for a long time.
Now, how long were you there before? Because you must have known that national service was looming, because you weren't in an... You couldn't be deferred, I presume.
Well, in fact, I was, because by 1954, there wasn't the urgency for the vast numbers of military personnel. So I just asked to be deferred, and I was.
Now, why did you ask to be deferred? Was there a reason, or was it just to put it off till you were a bit older? Or were you hoping to get out of it?
I mean, it's strange. I can't. Why did I do that? I'm going to have to take a rain check on that. I can't remember. But then something significant happened. We got a new chief chemist. And he and I did not get on well at all. So I thought, enough of this. Since the Battle of Britain, although I was only a wee sprat, obviously... that was always in people's minds. I'd been interested in flying. So I thought, what I will do, I will volunteer for aircrew. And this I did, in fact. And I went
off. How did you go about it?
I must have... I'd got friends who already RAF pilots. They must have steered me into the right line. And I can't actually remember now. I suppose I went to a recruiting office of some description and said I want to volunteer for aircrew. And that's as much as I can remember about that. I can remember the interview at Hornchurch with other people.
And what do you remember of that? This is 1954, is it? Late?
Yes, it would be... early 54, or it may even have been late 53. The medical was stringent.
That was at Hornchurch.
At Hornchurch,
yeah. Tell me about that.
Most of it I sailed to because I was very active in those days. So physically I was fit. My sight was apparently not as good as I thought it was. And in the fullness of time, that's what turned me down, or they turned me down on those grounds. I didn't learn that out till I actually joined the RAF, because at the end of the course, we were told that if they didn't want us, they'd let us know almost immediately. Well, it was weeks went by, and I'd virtually got my bags packed. And one day a letter arrived from Air Ministry. I thought, this is it. And I opened it up, and it was a rejection slip saying that I'd not been selected for air crew. So I thought, Yabu sucks then. I'll have my deferment cancelled, and I'll join the RAF and National Service and see what it's all about. And this is what I did.
Now, before we go to that, you mentioned you remember the interview at Hornchurch. You remember that?
Some of it.
Just what you remember. What were they after?
Basically, in those days, very little. When cast your mind back to the pilots of the air crew of the Second World War, they were kids, weren't they? 18 mostly. With little. Some with no academic backgrounds at all. And the interview was like that. There was, the friends of mine that were already RAF fighter pilots had primed me up on one or two answers for the test they were going to give. Like the internal combustion engine. They said, you must know this, Keith. Induction, compression, ignition, exhaust, 4 strokes. And I didn't know anything about engines, but I remembered that. And sure enough, that came up on the question paper. And so with a bit of cheating like that, I got through all these paper bits. The other part of it was, what can you say? Physical challenges. I use these much later on in my life, where you'd got to get a gang of men, we'll say, over a river. Only it wasn't a river, it was just part marked out on the gym. And you were given planks and ropes and things like that. So you had to devise methods of getting across. Or we were given a great oil drum and said, that's a bomb and you've got to get it to so-and-so. Not so much tests as just damn good fun. It was wonderful. And then another part of it was we were told we were all prisoners of war and we'd got to devise a method to escape while these serving officers just sat round the outside listening to what we were rabbiting on about. Yeah, but thinking back now, it reminds me a lot of the Scouts.
So after this, You thought you'd got through until you got
I did. I really, really thought. And to this day, I regret it. You know, I bone of contention
since. As a regular.
I was going to. Yes, I was going to sign my life away had they accepted me.
So instead, you decided to go back to go for national service in the RAF. Now, tell me how you went about that. Did you put your deferment aside, or what did you do?
Again, I can't remember. I must have written or gone to the people that I'd asked to defer me and said, well, look, knock it on the nut now, I want to go in. So I wasn't really called up to, as other people were, I suppose I volunteered.
So what happened? Where did you... when were you actually called up?
I was called up in April 1954. I can't remember the exact date. I think it's something like the 7th of April. And went to Cardington to kit out.
And what happened? That's the big service depot. I don't know what it's called. Receiving centre or something.
It's where the old dirigibles used to be based. I don't know whether the hangars are still there now. They certainly were when I was there kitting out.
And what do you remember of the kitting out process? What did they give you?
What did they give us? We had 2 shirts, 4 collars with studs, separate collars, working blue, best blue, socks, the dreaded underpants cellular airmen for the use of. They were like football shorts. Socks, a pair of shoes, and a pair of boots. Boots had got pimples all over them, including the toe caps. So I'd been primed by my mates, and I'd taken a candle and a toothbrush handle. So I busily started to heat the boots and get rid of the pimples on the toe caps, and then spit and polish till they shone like mirrors.
Were you actually staying overnight for a little while at Carnington?
Yeah, about a week it took.
What else were you doing at Carnington?
Well, we'd got some acting corporals that tried to get us to march. They weren't DIs, so they weren't very successful. I don't really know. It seemed a long time, because what happened was, I got there, I think it was a Thursday, and on Friday they said, right, you're going back home, but you can't wear your uniform because you're not fit yet. So go back home in civvies and come back Monday, which we did. And that's about as much as I can remember.
So you didn't make much progress in your drill?
Oh, no, none at all. No, I had a session in the tin room. I wasn't too happy with that.
What's the tin room?
That's in the cookhouse where all the tins they've used to do the cooking for the whole camp have to be cleaned. And it's greasy and horrid. And it was awful. And my shiny boots didn't shine anymore.
Was there enough soap and hot water? I mean.
Oh, yeah, stacks. No end. There's a surf heat of it.
Stacks of grease as
yeah.
Well. Anything else about cookout fatigues?
Not the fatigues. When I got there first, they showed me to the billet I was going to stay in, and then said, there's a meal. So they took me up to the cookhouse, and I can remember it was toad in the hole. It was delicious, believe me. And I went back to the billet, and then one or two more came in. So the same corporal arrived and said, there's a meal, fall in. And I joined in and went back and had a second helping, which was pretty good. Yeah. So that's it. I can't fault the food at all.
Was the food? All the food was good at Carnington, was it?
I thought so. Now, whether that's because I had a sheltered background, for the want of a better phrase, and I don't think I did. I just thought the food was good.
And enough of it.
Oh, and plenty of it, yes.
Now, how long, you're Carnington a couple of weeks, so still in April, basically. What's your next move?
But then it was to Hennesford for square bashing.
Hennesford, now how do you spell that?
HEDNESFORD.
Where's that near?
That is near, it's in the Black Country, Cannock Chase.
Staffordshire?
Yeah.
Now, what was your reception when you, because this is your first real training base. Now, what was it called? I mean, did it have a name, the unit? You weren't joining a squadron or anything?
Oh, no. No, it was just a square bashing camp, a recruit training centre. Where we got shouted at frequently.
Now, how did they receive, you know, you arrive, you're almost civilians, you've got your uniform, but how did they take you in?
Very quickly and very sharply. We were left in no doubt as to who was in charge there.
Did it come as a bit of a shock, all the shouting?
No. Not at all to me. Or the discipline either. I've heard people moan, but all they wanted from us was a tidy appearance, a smart appearance. And if you didn't get it right, then you got bawled out, and so you should, in my view.